And welcome to Weather Nag and Focus on this Tuesday, March 25th. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. We got some clouds out there, even some rain and, yes, snow, believe it or not, out around the Cooperstown area. Those areas could pick up a half inch to a quick inch of snow. Other than that, it looks like mainly rain and most of it falling just to the west of the valley. Areas around, between Tower City and Castleton, probably going to see a few light scattered showers, a few light sprinkles down around Horace and out towards Castleton. All of that moving southeastward. Areas in Lakes Country, not going to see a whole lot out of this, but other than that, not a big precip maker, but enough to, again, remind some areas, like I said, around the Cooperstown area, that winter's not quite done yet.
Well, we certainly wouldn't want to call it winter over at this point. It's only the end of March. There's always plenty of time. I had to even take a look at a calendar because we've been lucky. It's been pretty nice so far. I get it. We've had some snow. We had that bitter cold spell for a while. But we're doing okay. I mean, today you could wear a lighter jacket, not the complete heaviest one you own.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And there is some warmer weather in the forecast as we head towards Thursday of this week. But then we're keeping an eye on the potential of another system coming our way as we head into Friday and into the weekend. So just a few light scattered showers. And again, some areas out around the Cooperstown area could pick up a quick half inch to an inch of snow this afternoon with temperatures there being stuck in the 30s. And the rest of us should hit the low to mid 40s today with northwest winds about 5 to 10. Partly cloudy tonight. We'll drop off into the mid to upper 20s. And then as we head into Wednesday, kind of a repeat as another weak system moves in from the northwest with the majority of the precip to the west of the valley and highs on Wednesday in the upper 40s to near 50. And then sun returns, but it is going to be on the breezy side as we head into Thursday with highs in the low to mid 50s. And then two pieces of this storm coming at us. First one on Friday, giving us breezy conditions and a few light scattered showers with highs in the 40s, and then that some of that may change to a wet snow Friday night, Saturday, with temperatures falling into the 30s during the weekend. How much snow? A little too early to tell, but it looks like any real accumulating snow should stay in the far northern valley, kind of hugging that U.S.-Canadian border, and then another piece down to our south. Through South Dakota and stretching into southern Minnesota. Again, the track of this storm not set in stone yet, so that snowfall area could change a bit as we head into the weekend, something we'll keep an eye on for the rest of the week.
Well, we never let the weather slide away because in North Dakota, that is probably the one thing that you focus on more than anything is what's going to happen for the weather today. Do we all check our weather apps getting our morning started? And so here's your updates to pay attention, folks. We're glad you're listening and glad you're here. If you have any questions about what you think might be upcoming for the weekend, maybe you even just want to call in road reports from where you're at. If you're in the Cooperstown area, seeing a little bit of snow, or you decide that later on this week you can let us know how things go where you're at, you can reach us on the Red Wing Shoes phone line, 701-293-9000. You can also send us emails, weather@flagfamily.com. And we live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV every day, so you can watch what we're up to, especially if we have visual aids. There are days where if you're watching on those live streams, again, Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV under Weather and Ag and Focus, you get to see all sorts of great things. Yesterday, we had photos up of the tractor that our guests drove all the way from Lancaster, Minnesota, down into Texas, and so much more. Glad you're here and listening today. Now, it's also National Grain Safety Week. As producers start to hit the field, many of you are doing farm repairs in the shop. You might even be thinking about your technology and making sure that's up to date as well. But when it comes to National Grain Safety Week, it's really a good idea to remind yourself of a couple of things. And that is taking aside all of the employees and making sure that everybody is prepped and ready, not just if we're cleaning out grain bins, but also if you are going to have potentially other emergencies on the farm. So there is a webinar series this week. It's done by Iowa State University. If you're interested and would like to register, you can drop me an email, ag@flagfamily.com, and I can give you the link to register for it. Tomorrow, I think that the seminar is going to be the best one of the week, and it's how to plan and prepare for emergencies from extreme weather to grain bin entrapment. That's held at 10 a.m. tomorrow. Again, this is a free webinar. If you have employees, particularly if you have someone who is new to the farm, Maybe this is an opportunity to sit down with them, show what you have around the farm, what are the things to be cautious of, how to do better. And we're coming up on storm season. Where should everybody go if there is a tornado coming through the farmyard? What if you're out in the field? If we are unloading grain bins, what are the types of safety things we should be thinking about? And so much more. There's even a worksite preventative maintenance that's a bonus session that's going to be held on Thursday, and that also is held at 10 a.m. So if you're interested in any of those, would love to have you sign up for them. Again, these are the Stand Up for Grain Bin Safety seminars, and this is National Grain Safety Week. In fact, there is a little scenario card, and I don't know if you have time to put it into our live stream, Addison, but it shows what happens in entrapments, and it's really shows that workers get entrapped when grain's flowing and unloading equipment is operating. Then as you try to perhaps break up a bridge, like there's a crust across the top of the bin, but grain has flowed out below and someone falls into that. The other thing that can happen is when you're trying to remove grain that's stuck to the side of the bin, and an avalanche can happen, and that can encompass you. So those are some of the reasons we are talking about grain bin safety this particular week. So that's just one of the things that we're doing. But also, Peterson Farm Seed is hosting a whole pile of events this week. They are doing some agronomic shop talks, and maybe they're in your neighborhood. If they are, you're going to want to stop and listen. Today's event was held in Cayuga this morning. Tomorrow, it'll be in Moorhead, Minnesota, Thursday in Valley City, and then on Friday in Minot. Maybe you want to hear what's going on with Peterson Farm Seed specifically, but in addition, you may want to hear about the rest of their lineup, what's happening agronomically in the region. Now, we've had tar spot. It's become a concern. Will we see a wetter season, and will that mean we have more potential for white mold in soybeans, and how can we prevent some of those problems? Well, that's what Peterson Farm Seed is going to be doing in their shop talks. So if you're interested in attending those, it's on their website. They'd be happy to give you some time to take a seat, listen, have a cup of coffee, and learn. So we're in that educational part of the year, Dean. This is when we spend so much time getting ready for this upcoming season, whether it's through safety, agronomy training, and so much more. There's a lot on everybody's plate.
And speaking of grain bins, we had a guest on a few weeks back, Bridget, where it was like some robotic, was it a robotic mm-hmm. arm or something to get into the grain bins so the farmers don't have to get in there, like you said, and break off a layer of crust. I mean, is that going to become more widely used here? So, I mean, there should be, with the technology we have now, there shouldn't be much reason for anybody to put their lives at risk like that.
So what you're referring to is the grain weevil. And yes, indeed, we were joined by Chad Johnson of the Grain Weevil Company out of Nebraska. And Addison, you're spot on. He's already got that up on our live stream, so you can see pictures of the grain weevil. It literally looks like a square Roomba, but its little legs are short flightings of auger. And so you can use the grain weevil. It's battery operated, lithium batteries. It's sealed. It can go in and knock down those bridges where grain is crusted up. You can use it to level a bin when you are loading in the fall. And I think the thing to remember here is it's not just grain. It really can be for any granular material. So if you're working in fertilizer plants, if you are in areas where you're handling stockpiles of building materials, anything granular this weevil could be used for, you can use a hydraulic system to lower it in and out of the bin. It weighs about 50 pounds. And then you could even swarm them. You could put multiples in the bin at the same time that could be doing the work. They come with a headlight so you can see where they're at. And all they have to do is come back to their little hook on the hydraulic unit, and it lifts them back up to the top of the bin. Or if they're down towards the bottom, you can walk in and get them when they're done with their work. But that would be the grain weevil. And one of the questions that we brought up to Chad was whether or not farmers would be able to receive an insurance discount by using something like this, so they don't have to worry about a human being in the bin. And at this point, they did not have an answer for it, but we think that might be coming up pretty soon. Probably one of the items that they'll be highlighting at the North Dakota State University Extension Safety Camps this summer, Angie Johnson has let me know that the Fargo camp is full. The Bismarck camp is down to about 5 open spots yet, and the Williston camp also has about 5 open spots. Those camps will be held end of May into June. If you haven't signed up and you'd like someone in your family to attend, again, you can reach out to North Dakota State University Extension. Your county agent can help, or you can reach Angie Johnson, who is the Farm and Ranch Safety Specialist for NDSU Extension, and she can get your students signed up for the camp. I think I've been to the camp with kids. It's outstanding. Even kids who are well-seasoned farm veterans, you might say, walk away and say, I really learned some things here. That was awesome.
And we've got a guest coming up here, one of our, I guess you could call her regular guest.
We are going to have On the Auction Block with Steffes Auction. We're going to be joined by Brad Alstead. Brad is actually on location, much like many of us are at this time of the year, and we're going to give him a phone call so we can visit with him about what is happening in the world of farm equipment auctions to date. So, looking forward to visiting with Brad after we get an update on the markets from the American Ag Network. Stay tuned. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, just in time for On the Auction Block with Brad Alstead from Steffes Group. Brad, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm up here in Bathgate, North Dakota. We just listed a very nice farm retirement auction, and we're busy trying to get things working.
Okay, so Brad, I got to ask a question right off the bat. Okay, as the auctioneer, you said, and I saw your message this morning saying, hey, we got to get this deal ready. What do you do when someone calls and says, we're going to have a retirement equipment auction or an auction liquidation? What are the things that you do immediately to get ready for that sale?
I tell you, I had a phone call last Thursday. He asked me if I could come and visit him on Saturday. We signed the contract last night, DocuSign. I got up at 4:30 this morning and took off, and we got two-thirds of the machinery listed. We're working on feature photos this afternoon, and we will be published by Friday, and the auction's going to open the 22nd of April, and we're super excited about it. So with technology and all the things that we do at Steffes, it goes fast.
Well, hey, Brad, and by the way, Brad, I guess I'm supposed to call you Hollywood from one of your friends. So she said, just call him Hollywood. He'll get a big chuckle out of it. But I want to ask you about the expansion of Steffes Group up in Canada. What's that all about now?
Well, I tell you what, we're super excited. You know, Steffes and Scott's vision and Bob's vision was always to grow and scale the company. And we acquired Bruce Trapansky Auctioneers, and that's out of Tisdale, Saskatchewan. And we're super excited to be up in Canada. We're going to be doing some live auctions up there starting next week. We got higher ag services auctions that we're going to be doing. We got a number of live sales, and we're super excited to be up into Canada and growing and scaling with Steffes, and it's a people business, and we're, like I said, very excited to be up in Canada. We have a lot of good Canadian buyers that come down here and support our auctions here in the States, and we like to work back and forth, so looking forward to it.
So, Brad, you're the guy who has his hand on equipment, and you take care of so many of that part of the auction business for Steffes. Any particular trends that you're seeing right now? Is there a certain lineup of tractors that you're seeing? Are folks getting rid of something to trade for a different one? And are you seeing a lot more air seeders or drills going on this time of year? What might you be seeing coming into auctions right now?
Well, right now, you know, everybody's excited about putting in the crop. So air seeders, big planters, planters that have the specialty like high speed and precision are very sought after. The track tractors, especially like the RX, 8RX, 4-track, very popular. A lot of optimism, even though commodity prices are down, we still have optimism out there in the marketplace, and the machinery values are holding, quite frankly, very, very well. So we're excited to see that.
Boy, that's impressive, because knowing that new equipment sales are down and you're saying secondary equipment's holding steady, that's great. And do you feel like that could hold through the rest of the summer or even through the calendar year?
Well, you know, you have to put it in perspective. We had such an escalation of new prices to the point where it's just not sustainable. And the market is going to speak just like all markets. And the market machinery that we're selling right now, yes, it's been discounted, but that's already taken place. Now it's useful life that's left in the piece of equipment, and people see value in that. And just like anything, it does depreciate, but good quality, well-kept farm machinery is still got a market and still being sought after because the price of new equipment is not coming down. There's no rebates. There's no programs. They're just going to shut down the factories, as you well know, with the case layoffs. John Deere's next. They're on the market in August and September, and they're just going to shut down production to get their equipment line in order.
Absolutely. They've got to make sure that they are reducing some of that higher inventory, et cetera, in order to keep up with what really can move, I would imagine, is the best way to say it. Brad, as you are thinking about auctions, when you think about auctions that are going on as of late, is there something that you've seen that really stood out, whether it was a particular tractor or a combine, something that you just said, wow, that's an item that people are really going to be seeking when they come to this sale?
You know, I think when you have something that is an older, low-houred piece of equipment, like a tractor, a low-mileage truck, we're selling some 1990s vintage Peterbilt trucks that have been well cared for and bring in a retail price, and some of that has to do with no def, easy to work on. But old Joe over there, he took care of that truck, and he put it in the shed every night, and everybody wants to buy that truck. And we've seen multiple events like that this spring, and it just goes to show if you take care of your equipment, you're going to get rewarded when it comes time to selling it.
Boy, that was the word I was thinking of, was no def. If there's something that folks are seeking right now, they'd like to get away from that in any piece of equipment, to be honest.
That is so true. That is so true.
So now as we get ready to bring up more sales, I'm just looking at your lineup that you've got. You've got some farm auctions that are coming up. You have excavating equipment, because I do realize that every farmer is probably, at least the majority of farmers, have a backhoe, a track hoe, some the payloaders, et cetera. So those are not just construction-type equipment anymore. And I know I'm calling you on the cusp of, or having to do this off the cuff, but Brad, do you have a consignment sale coming up anytime soon for equipment as well?
Well, what we do, Bridget, is we offer a bi-monthly auction program where two times a month, we take in consignments throughout the country, and we're doing also a construction sale that's coming up shortly, and we provide a service that gives opportunity to sellers to participate in an auction environment twice a month, and it's our online bi-monthly. It's very successful. In fact, we have a bi-monthly closing tomorrow with late model John Deere mechanical front-wheel drive tractors. We have some farm retirement pieces that are coming on. We have something for everyone. I believe there's four rings and close to 900 lots, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, we have a platform. We like to call it a successful platform, and it offers a wide range of services to all of our people that we do business with.
As I'm scrolling through, I see so many things that are coming up. I even recognize some names of folks who have some auctions that are up and coming with you, Brad. But if I'm listening and I know that it's time for me to get rid of a couple of extra pieces of equipment that I might have on hand and not need, whether it's trucks, construction, tractors, maybe even some grain carts, what is my best route to get a hold of you to talk about those things? Because like you said, you guys move fast. I just heard you give that timeline earlier about how you got to this Bathgate sale. So how do we get a hold of you, Brad?
Well, I tell you, it's real easy. You can call our office in Fargo or go onto our website, stephisgroup.com. Our office number is 701-237-9173, or Brad's personal cell phone, 701-238-0240. And guess what? I answer the phone.
I bet you do. And I bet you return the calls too, Brad.
I sure do.
Well, thank you again for joining us. And that was Brad Olstead. He is with Stephis Group. This segment is on the auction block. When we return from bottom of the hour news, I've got a little bit of a legislative update from one of our state legislators. He unfortunately couldn't join us today because he's in committee, but I'll help out with that when we return. Well, if you have questions today, whether it's about any of the topics that we visit on, whether it's about weather, you can always reach us on the JLA insurance phone line. That number is 701-293-9000. And think about your questions you're going to want to ask next week when we are joined in studio by Chris Sherman. Chris is with Tech Support Farm, and you know, your technology is supposed to help your farm and ranch, but if you have questions and you're not sure if it's really working at its best for you, you're going to want to reach out to Chris at techsupportfarm.com. With Chris's work, one of the things that he is making sure folks are aware of right now is that as we go into the summer season, are you aware that everything's functioning well, whether it is the laptops in the office, the iPads, and all of the data flow that's happening in tractors and later on will be in combines. It's going to be in sprayers about mid-season. And if you need help with any of that and making sure that it's working the way it should be, you're going to want to talk to Chris at Tech Support Farm. Now, things that should be working the way you want them to. Well, one of those is our state legislature. And I had had the opportunity to invite a Representative Jared Haggart from District 20 in to join us today, but he's in committee right now. And I'll be honest, that probably takes precedence over a radio interview. So while Jared is in committee meeting, he did send me an update on a few things that are going on. First of all, we know that property tax bills to enhance the impact of ag in our state have been a high priority. In December, there was an organizational session that brought forth the formation of the Rural Caucus. And this caucus is a coalition of those that represent rural areas in the state. Issues covered by the caucus will include school funding, hospital access, road and bridge funding, and the impact of the legislative proposals and how they affect our small towns and ag communities within North Dakota. Property tax, been a big discussion. That's front and center. And there have been extended conversations around the need for increased long-term stable road funding in the county, state, and township level. As someone who drives those roads on a regular basis, I can tell you exactly which roads, Dean, I think should be worked on. So if you guys have a question, I'll add them to my list and pass them on to the Rural Caucus.
And Bridget, I had somebody email me, and I didn't have the answer, so I figured you might. Where are we at on the farm bill? I know we haven't, obviously nothing's been signed yet, but is there any signs that we're getting closer to getting something finalized on that?
On a federal level with the farm bill, and we've been talking just most recently here about state legislation, but on a federal level for the farm bill, we actually have several groups, commodity groups, that have pointed out we may not see anything until Q3 of this year, if not later. There is still a lot of work to be done in bringing bipartisanship to it because you have folks that are not necessarily connected to what's in the farm bill. When we say farm bill, we just think about agriculture, but it also has to include so many other aspects that USDA manages, such as food and nutrition. And so that's still being worked on. Here at a state level, House Bill 1382 addresses what's going on with road construction or road funding, and they want to increase the gas tax by 3 cents. That would generate $42 million for a biennium, with $18 million going to the counties, 10 to cities, and $14 million to townships. This would be stability and funding that's needed to make some long-term plans. Again, I would tell you, as someone who drives those roads, I'd like some stability on the road as well as the plan. Also, with the Rural Caucus, they've discussed the rural economic development zones and the successes that they've had in the past 50 years without appropriations coming from the state of North Dakota. It's been critical in getting grant dollars to local level for housing, daycare startups, and so much more. Again, that's just a little bit of an overview and summary from Representative Jared Haggart. He represents District 20 here in North Dakota in the House of Representatives. And any time that we can pick up little tidbits of information from those who are serving us in the legislature, it's greatly appreciated. Glad that they are. One of the things that is going on, as I mentioned earlier, is National Grain Safety Week. And there's another graphic that Addison's going to put on our live stream. And again, you can be following us on Facebook, YouTube, Acres TV. The live stream is under WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus. And that graphic talks about injuries right now. And if you think about the common agents that end in fatalities, quad bikes is what it's called, but really four-wheelers. So often we have folks driving four-wheelers, they don't realize how overpowered they are, or we're overdriving the conditions. Fatal farm accidents are about 20% of them caused by four-wheelers. Another 20% tractors. Side-by-sides make up another 12%. So side-by-sides are a little bit more stable. You're talking about a wider wheelbase, something that tends to have a roll bar on it as well. Now, when it comes to just injury, those four-wheelers consist of 40% of the injuries that we have in farm accidents. And oftentimes, we're not wearing helmets when we're using our four-wheelers. And so that certainly adds to it as well. Tractors equate to about 13% of those accidents. That can be rollovers. That can be mishaps when we're pulling out equipment. It's too often that we have those stories when in muddy conditions, someone's hooking up to a tow rope to a tractor and the tow rope breaks or the clevis lets go and you've got that slingshot effect where that tow rope comes back and someone is injured, whether it hits them in the body. Unfortunately, I know far too many instances where someone is hit in the head and a major head injury leads to fatality. And then lastly, on that commonality of injuries on the farm, horses and cattle make up 18% of those potential injuries. You know, we've had several folks on to talk about livestock handling, veterinarians and more, and they will point out that even if you think that that's an animal you've been around for a long time and you know them well, they trust you, you never can be too sure. There's can be moments where that animal gets spooked and you're the recipient of the downside in the whole situation. I had a farmer friend, this is pushing 30 years ago, who was out calving late at night, thought that he knew that cow well, but when he went to tag her calf, she didn't take very kindly to it, came at him from the rear, charged him, flipped him over, and when he landed at the base of his neck and was then a quadriplegic for life. Oh. So we've got to be careful when we're out there, you guys. Can't stress safety enough right now.
You think a lot of people, and I shouldn't say a lot, but do you think when you've been doing it for so long, you kind of take the simple safety tips for granted?
We do. You become just, I don't want to say lackadaisical, but you know what? I've done this. It's repetitive. I've done it so many times. It shouldn't be an issue, right? Things should just happen. And I
all it takes
have
is one time. Yeah.
One time that you're not focused on it and boom. There we go. You're going to get left out in a situation that would go downhill pretty fast. Mm. I almost said left out in the cold, but that's because I was looking ahead to one of the headlines that are going on currently, and that is in Minnesota, research work is being done to determine if that cold weather snap we had back a few weeks ago affected any of the bugs that might be infesting farm fields this summer. So if y'all were to take a guess, will the cold weather stop us from having things like soybean aphid and corn rootworm this year? I'm just going to say that as a yes or no question.
I'd say no.
No, they're coming back.
Yeah.
insect cold tolerance is pretty good. Insects will really match the temperature of their surrounding areas, certainly making them known to be cold-blooded. But insects can survive that below freezing temperature because there's antifreeze-like compounds in their water in their bodies. So it will lower them, lower their body temperature like it would antifreeze in a car, and they can survive. So for, say, soybean aphids, the temperature each year can be a simple way to forecast what that mortality was due to the freeze, and it's probably around 25%. But basically what that tells me is we're still going to have soybean aphids in 2025. They're not going away anytime soon. The aphids also like to overwinter as eggs in buckthorn buds, so they get a little protection from the wind and from the cold air temperatures. Eggs generally freeze at about a minus 30 below, but most eggs, again, can still manage to make it through that. I know we had some minus 30 below nights, but there probably weren't as many as we might think this year, Dean. I would just take a guess at that.
No, you're correct.
I mean, we had a few.
Yeah, we were colder than last winter. And we've actually been a little bit snowier than last winter, but we're still, temp-wise, we're far from where we typically are in terms of temperatures. We've been a little bit warmer than normal on average for the majority mm-hmm. of the winter. We went through that three-week stretch of brutally cold weather, but it's been – this is 2 years. I mean, I would venture to say – it's going to be hard-pressed to get back-to-back-to-back winters like the last two have been. So we'll see what next winter holds. But first, we've got to get through this spring and summer, and mark your calendars for April 3rd on the Jay Thomas Show. We will be having Gary Lezak on, Bridget, myself, and we'll be talking about what this spring and summer look like for our ag community and for anybody in general. We'll be kind of highlighting when we're expecting some of the bigger rain events. You know, will they fall on specific holidays, or, you know, stuff like that. And for our ag community, we've been pretty dry for most, for the winter in general, we've been drier than normal. And we're starting to see drought conditions expand in a lot of the Corn Belt, especially western Nebraska, western parts of South Dakota and North Dakota. Those areas are target areas for drought conditions expanding here. And what we'll be going over is, you know, are these droughts are continually expanding or shrinking? Now, these drought areas to our west have been expanding. The dryness in our area has been expanding as well. So will they continue to expand as we head into spring, or will we get timely rains where these drought areas will start to contract and we won't have a big problem as we head into spring and summer? And those are some of the things we'll be going over on our spring and summer LRC outlook. Again, mark your calendars, April 3rd, starting at 2 p.m. on the Jay Thomas Show. So looking forward to that. It's Gary and I have been talking about what it looks like, and I'll tell you what, by the end of April, I know that's coming up, we've got three big storms on the LRC from mid-April through the end of April into that first few days in May. And I'll tell you what, if we don't get beneficial rains from that part of the stormy LRC cycle, we may have things to worry about as we head into the rest of spring and summer. But again, we'll kind of dive more into detail on that coming up on April 3rd. We still have a ways to go.
We do, and you know, we were talking about cold temperatures, and can that stop insects from coming? That's one segment of what happens with insect populations that we might see in the field. The other has a lot to do with the wind, and I know you can't predict the wind with the LRC, how often we're going to have southerly winds, but that certainly makes a difference, especially in the case of spider mites for soybeans. There is certain bugs that will just blow on up here, and when they show up, it's time to fight back, you might say, and keep them from getting into the crop. So realistically, we're going to predict as much as we can, but there's just a few things that even the LRC can't do, although it's pretty good. All right, folks, we've got a little more time to talk about weather and headlines, and we're going to do that when we return.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. I want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon, and want to go over a kind of a road condition report. We do have snow out to our west from Cooperstown through about just south of Hope around the Colgate area. Stretching down toward Page, there is some brief heavy snow shower activity going on there where you could pick up a quick inch of snow. Already an inch of snow being reported around the Cooperstown area down towards Hope. And again, stretching just to the east of Pillsbury. This is going to continue to drift to the south and east. Most of this staying west of the FM area. Now, if you're heading west on 94, there have been reports of slushy roads on 94 west of Castleton all the way out to Valley City. Highway 18 between Hunter and Castleton reporting slushy conditions. Cooperstown area up to Devil's Lake. Some slushy roadways there down towards Laverne and Valley City. Again, some brief heavier snow showers as the system presses quickly to the south and east. And again, anything that falls here in the FM area is going to be mainly light rain. We might mix in a snowflake or two with temperatures hovering in the upper 30s. But again, if you're going out west or northwest between Valley City, Castleton, and Devil's Lake Basin, expect a little bit of slushy roadway out there. But again, as the system continues to press to the south and east, by mid-late afternoon, those conditions will start to improve. But just a reminder, it's still March, and still might have to deal with a little bit of snow-covered roadways out there as we head into the afternoon. And again, we'll have a system similar to this coming through tomorrow. Temperatures should be a little warmer tomorrow, though, as we're expecting mainly rain out of that. And then as we head towards the weekend, we'll be keeping an eye on a potential system, two of them, one coming through Friday, and then that's going to bring us mainly rain, But then as we head into Friday night, Saturday, a lot of question marks on the tail end of a second system, which right now looks to be focusing areas just to our south for snowfall into South Dakota, southern Minnesota. But it's close enough to where we're going to have to keep an eye on that, because models tend to flip-flop back and forth because the system's still out in the Pacific. So once it gets inland, we get better weather data. So that should be by tomorrow night. That system pulls inland, and we get a better track on that system for the weekend if you have any travel plans coming up this weekend. But again, if you're out and about this afternoon, right now, some brief heavy snow around the Colgate area that's pushing southeastward and Amenia. You should be seeing some of that, especially just to the west of Amenia. Could see some brief heavy snow showers. And again, could accumulate half inch to an inch. So keep that in mind if you're traveling today into just to the west of the FM area.
Well, and keep an eye out for those. And also, feel free to give us a call so we know what's happening around us. You can do that on the JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. Even though it might be a little gloomy out those windows because it is in mine, it's not too late or even too early to get started on some of those bedding plants. We'll be joined later this week by Don Kinsler, North Dakota State University Extension Horticulturalist, and we're going to talk about getting things ready for the season. And if you haven't done it yet, now's your chance. Get on out and start picking up those supplies for starting some of your seeds. You're going to want to have a really good growing medium. Maybe you're going to have a combination of something like a perlite or vermiculite. You can have some soil with it. As Don mentioned, some of those potting soils that you buy premixed that can have Miracle-Gro and so forth in them, they're a good start, but don't rely on that to just be the only thing that you want to use. And also check to make sure that they are sterile, don't free of weed seeds, etc., before you start getting those plants into the little containers and ready to go. Speaking of containers, you can be using something that's the solute flats, the little squares that are the flats you plant into, plastic pots, peat pots, eggshells, any of those are great ways to get some of these plants started. If I was going to be starting tomato plants, I probably would have started earlier, and I likely would have used eggshells because the calcium, as it breaks down the eggshell, is good for your tomato plants. Personally speaking, I learned a while back to crush up eggshells into the bottom of the plant, the transplant hole where I'm going to put my tomato. So eggshells, a little bit of soil, put your tomato plant on top of that, because then as the eggshells break down, the calcium leaches out into the plant root system. It's a great way to do it, and calcium is always of benefit to things like peppers and tomatoes. And at the rate it's going, that one egg is worth probably about $2. So make sure that you are very conscientious of how much you're using in the bottom of the plant. And then many are going to be using grow lamps at this time of year in order to get longer days for those plants, getting them ready to go out in the sunshine. Personally speaking, I also will turn a fan on mine to toughen up their stems a little bit before we take them outside. That hearty North Dakota wind can be a lot of tough on very fragile young stems. So get ready for planting. It's coming soon.
It is, no doubt. So, again, if you're out and about this afternoon west of the FM area, some slushy roadways west of Castleton on 94. So for Bridget, myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, that's coming up next.